Hello and welcome to the Fast Track. I'm your host, Scott Benjamin, and you know, it's a fairly new show. We're still kind of getting our sea legs here, trying to figure out exactly what we're doing with this program, but we do have a focus, and the focus is we're going to be concentrated on things that are about quick cars, about fast cars, about people that go fast, about anything really that goes fast. And you know, what's funny is I sometimes like to take it the other direction. Maybe we'll talk about some things that go slow, and maybe we'll do that at some point today, because it's kind of a nice reversal to, you know, kind of see like what the opposite end of the spectrum is like. We're going to talk about new cars and some of the quickest new cars that you can buy, and the price range that we're going to be talking about is less than $30,000. Now, the Kelley Blue Book average price for a new car in 2019 is around $37,285 this year. So 2019, I believe that they go with a sedan price, you know, just kind of a middle of the road price there. The average new price for a car is $37,285. That's here in the United States. That seems to creep up every year by about 3 or 4%, something like that. Sometimes it's as little as 2, but usually it's around 3%. So you can count on adding 3% to that for 2020, and I'm sure that we'll continue to climb as we get later and later here. But I want to talk about cars that are less than $30,000 to begin with. And I think before we even start that, one thing that I wanted to mention here, and this is just kind of like an off-topic thing that I thought was interesting. I made a road trip last weekend. I went to Indiana, and I went to northern Indiana for a family reunion, and there were a good number of people there. There were probably 80 people that showed up in this park there, and this is in Wabash, Indiana. And got a lot of family there, obviously, and, you know, some distant relatives that I hadn't seen for a long time. And one of them was my cousin, and I have seen him recently, and I know he was a Car Stuff listener when I had the other show. But he's a younger cousin of mine, first cousin, and I do know that he rides motorcycles. So when I saw him there at the reunion, I decided I'd talk to him a little bit about that. And he said that he had recently made what was, for him, I think, the longest trip that he ever made on his motorcycle. And it was up into the southern part of Michigan. And he went to, I think it was like an RC track, an outdoor RC track for radio-controlled vehicles that was, you know, pretty intense. I think it was a pretty cool thing. He said that, you know, some people are spending thousands of dollars, you know, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 on these rigs for off-road RC vehicles and racing them in some kind of, I don't know if it's a championship or what, if it's just a, you know, weekend hobby or and something like that. He made the trip up there, and I was asking him about helmet laws because as soon as I crossed into Indiana, I realized that they did not have the same helmet laws as we have here in Georgia or even, you know, in Kentucky or Tennessee. It's a little different. In Indiana, anybody that is under the age of 18 is required to wear a helmet. Anybody over the age of 18, it's optional. You don't have to. And I saw this many, many times on the road as I was driving there because it's northern Indiana, really. So a lot of time spent in Indiana. And I was noticing that, you know, there's some people on the highway going 90 miles an hour, you know, a husband, wife on a great big Harley-Davidson motorcycle, both of them not wearing helmets. And it's a little bit startling when you see it. I mean, it's up to them. It's their own, you know, right to, you know, wear them or not wear them. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, it's up to them. But it is startling to see it, you know, especially when they're going that type of speed on the highway. It seems wrong. I don't know how better to put that. Again, it's everybody's personal decision. I agree with that. That's fine. But I asked him if he rides wears a helmet when he rides, and he says that he always does. And one thing that he mentioned almost immediately, and this is where this whole story is going, I guess, is that something that you don't normally think of, and this is one very good reason to wear a helmet. He was talking about how it was raining on the way there. And, you know, the rain kind of hurts your skin as you ride. I don't know if you've ever been on a roller coaster maybe, or maybe you are a motorcycle rider going, you know, 60, 70 miles an hour. Rain really hurts when it hits you going 60 or 70 miles an hour. Same thing with a roller coaster. It's that same feeling. He said he encountered some rain on that trip. But he said that, you know, he has always worn a helmet when he rides. And one really good lesson that he got early on was when he was fortunately wearing a helmet. And this is one of those things that is just one of those completely unexpected things that you would never, ever consider happening. But he was out for an evening ride, and he was somewhere in the Indiana countryside there going, I don't know, 50 plus miles an hour, whatever it was, whatever the speed was. A bat hit him in the head. a bat. So he's flying, he's driving around a corner, you know, bat comes out of nowhere. I mean, you don't even have time to really to react. You don't have time to duck or anything. Bat strikes him in the face shield. And of course the bat's destroyed. But there's just this gross stuff all over his helmet and, you know, on his shoulder. And he said it was really kind of sickening, you know, the result of it. But he was imagining what would happen if he wasn't wearing that helmet when he struck this thing. I mean, it would have caused some damage. It could have caused some, you know, damage to his eye. It could have, you know, broken his jaw or whatever. I've been in another vehicle. I was in a Cadillac one time that hit a bat, you know, in the same place in Indiana when we were out for an evening drive. My grandfather was driving and it struck the windshield when I was in the front seat. And it was pretty scary. It's very abrupt, and it happens quickly. But I don't think I'd ever heard of a motorcycle rider ever talking about, you know, hitting a bat in the evening. I thought it was really interesting and kind of unusual. It's one of those things, again, that you just don't think about, and it's probably a good reason to wear that helmet with the face shield. I do want to say, gosh, man, it seems like we're never going to get into this topic, but there's a few things that I want to say. We're not talking about the fastest cars. We're talking about the quickest cars, the, you know, the 0 to 60 speeds. And so quick doesn't necessarily translate to fast, and that's not the—I just don't think they're the same thing. Fast is where you're typically talking about something that's, you know, overall, you know, high speed, a top speed that's greater than a typical road car. We're not talking about cars like that. We're talking about cars that can quickly get— from 0 to 60 miles per hour. And there's about 15 or 16 on this list. And you know, I'm going to go through these relatively quickly. And then we're going to take this conversation in a different direction because I have found a lot of information about the 0 to 60 test that I think you would be, or you would find interesting, rather. And even another test that is possibly even more meaningless. And believe it or not, maybe we'll give just a little bit away here. But let's begin here. Now, I want to say that these cars start at 6.3 seconds, which is not bad for 0 to 60 speed. 6.3 seconds is quick. And if you think back, if you're old enough to remember back into the 1980s, let's say mid-1980s, anything that was going in, you know, 60 miles per hour in about 8 seconds was considered a quick car. That was a quick acceleration. And now we're getting into, you know, 6 seconds, below 6 seconds. And there, of course, there's a lot of cars that will go faster than that. And we'll talk about those as well, the fastest cars. But again, under $30,000 is the price point that we're talking about here. And this all begins with the Acura ILX, which will go 0 to 60 in 6.3 seconds. Now, that is a 201-horsepower, four-cylinder engine. The price here is about $26,895. So we're talking about a relatively quick car for, you know, about $27,000. It has an 8-speed dual-clutch automatic transmission and, I guess, just a bargain small sports sedan, if you want to look at it that way. Now, I'm not selling in any of these cars, so understand that. I'm not trying to talk anyone up over the other one, but the speeds are going to go faster and faster as we talk here. And a couple of these are tied, you know, for maybe the top spot here. You know, like the first three, I think, are in the 6.3 second range, which includes the Fiat 124 Spider, which also comes in at 6.3 seconds. That one is priced exactly the same, it's $200 less. It's $685. So $26,685. And essentially, this is like, I mean, if you want to look at it simply, this is essentially like the Mazda MX-5 Miata. I mean, it's very, very closely related to that car. It has a 6-speed manual transmission. That's the standard for the Fiat. And again, 6.3 seconds. Pretty quick. Another one that's quick is the Honda Civic Si Coupe, which is at 6.3 seconds. Again, 205 horsepower, four-cylinder engine. The base price is a little bit lower here. It's $25,220. Now, you know, one quick thing here as we go through, you're going to find that a lot of these cars have automatic transmissions, and a lot of people will say, well, you know, why even talk about those cars? Why not just talk about the manual transmissions? They're typically faster. That's not necessarily the case anymore. We're finding that some of these automatic transmissions are performing so well, they shift so well, that they are able to shift better than somebody could shift a manual transmission. And that wasn't always the case in the past, but you'll find that a lot of these cars on this list do have an automatic transmission that performs exceedingly well or even better than a human could shift. And I 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said anything like that. Usually, you know, we were talking about the manual transmissions and how that was the option to get because you could shift just a little bit faster, but that's not the case anymore. Moving on to number 4 of 16. 16. We're talking about the Dodge Challenger, which is a V6 powered car, and this gets 0 to 60 in about 6.2 seconds. 6.2 seconds, and that's the base price of around $29,340. This one does jump up about 100 horsepower from the previous entry, so it's about 305 horsepower versus the 205 that we just talked about with the Honda Civic. Again, this one is paired to an 8-speed automatic transmission. So again, that's another automatic transmission. The next one is not, as a matter of fact. It's the Toyota 86 or the Subaru BRZ, which also comes in at 6.2 seconds. And this goes back down to 205 horsepower. This has a flat 4 engine with 205 horsepower and a standard 6-speed manual transmission. That's what we're talking about for the 6.2 seconds. The base price is a little bit lower than the previous entry at $27,480 or $26,680 for the Subaru. And then we go on to another V6 powered car. We're talking about the number 6 of 16, which is the Chevy Impala. And that comes in at 6.1 seconds. Again, another 305 horsepower V6 engine. You know what? Let's just quickly buzz through these because I do want to get to some more interesting things, I think, anyways, in this podcast. And that is kind of the reasoning behind some of the 0 to 60 tests that we see and what they mean, really. Are they meaningful to us in a real way? There's the Mini Cooper S hardtop at 6.1 seconds. There's the Hyundai Kona Turbo at 6 seconds, so an even 6 seconds for a Hyundai. Another Hyundai, which comes in at 6 seconds, is the Veloster Turbo. Then the Volkswagen GTI at 5.8 seconds. So we're getting into the 5-second range here, and it's only going to drop from this point. There's the Mazda MX-5 Miata, which is 5.7 seconds, 0 to 60. This is a strange one. Buick Regal Sportback comes in at 5.6 seconds. Now, I wouldn't have expected a Buick to be on this list, but it is. This one has a 250 horsepower turbocharged 2-liter 4-cylinder with a 9-speed automatic transmission. Now, I never would have guessed a Buick would be on the list, especially this high at 5.6 seconds. That's pretty quick, and it comes in at $25,995, so less than $26,000. The next one I would expect to be on this list, and that is the Subaru WRX, and that comes in at 5.5 seconds, but that's still not the fastest one because we are talking about the Chevy Camaro, the 2-liter turbo, which comes in at 5.1 seconds, and then there's the Ford Mustang EcoBoost, which also comes in at 5.1 seconds. So you can still get a car that will go 0 to 60 in 5 seconds for under $30,000. And I think that's a pretty good option for a lot of people if they're not willing to go as high as, what's the average price now? $37,285 is what I said. So that is, I don't know, I guess that's a positive note, something that if you're out new car shopping, you might want to check that out if 0 to 60 is something that's important to you. And it turns out that 0 to 60... I don't know. Maybe it's something that's in your head. Maybe it's something, I always thought that 0 to 60 was an important measurement as well. And there's probably a good reason behind that or why I thought that it was important. And we will talk about that in just a moment after we come back from a word from our sponsor. And we're back, and you're listening to the Fast Track, and I'm your host, Scott Benjamin. And we were just talking about a kind of a long list, I guess, of the quickest cars that you can buy for less than $30,000. And I had about 16 cars, 15 or 16 cars there on that list. And I know that was a little bit overwhelming, and I hopefully we can get past this and talk about something that maybe is a little bit more meaningful to each one of us, or maybe even less meaningful to each one of us. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the conversation that goes along with this, because I had always looked at 0 to 60 as one of those things where, personally, when I'm buying a car, I want something that's kind of quick. I want something that feels good when I accelerate off the line, or, from a standing start, maybe to get onto the highway or something like that. And I think that maybe my thinking was a little bit flawed now in the way that I was reading into how important a 0 to 60 time is for a vehicle. And it seems like there's a lot of articles out there about how 0 to 60 doesn't necessarily mean as much as you might think it does in daily driving. Or the numbers are something that manufacturers like to brag about, and they all like to say that, we have the quickest car from 0 to 60, and they might even have a different measurement, as we'll talk about here in just a minute. There's one that's maybe even less meaningful, if you can, if you want to put it that way. I mean, I hate to say it that way because, you know, all this stuff means something to somebody. But, you know, to you and I on a daily basis, it doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. It's really cool for the manufacturers to be able to brag about this stuff, you know, for bragging rights. But it doesn't necessarily play out in the real world the way that we think it will, you know, the way it does on paper. There's a way to look at this, I guess. And I've asked my wife, I've asked my daughter, I've asked some people around the office here, I've asked, you know, some of my relatives, I've asked some friends that I have, you know, that I correspond with. What do you think about 0-60 time? Is it important to you when you buy a vehicle? And overwhelmingly, so far, everybody, every single one has really said it doesn't really come into their thought process when they're buying a car. I think that there's, you know, something that's like the, you know, when you're in the car and you're driving it, you want it to be quick, you want it to feel good. I don't think you necessarily look at that car and say, you know, I'm interested in this car because it gets it goes 0-60 in 5.1 seconds versus 5.8 seconds. In the real world, the truth is you're not going to use that. And I didn't really believe that until I read several articles about this. And it's going back, you know, a long time. It's not something brand new that people are looking at and saying exactly why it doesn't necessarily matter. And the reality, I guess, is that, you know, you don't actually experience driving a vehicle 0-60, it's kind of like a mismeasurement of a car's performance because there's very rarely a time when you're actually going 0-60. From a stoplight, you're typically not doing that because the speeds on that road, unless you're breaking the law, of course, and I think a lot of people do, you know, as far as like, you know, trying to out-accelerate the person next to you, you're not necessarily going to take it up to 60 or above immediately off the stoplight unless you are, again, trying to race against somebody next to you or just, you know, trying to have a little bit of fun, I guess, when no one's around. If you're on an on-ramp, but you're already kind of like at a rolling start, unless you're at a metered on-ramp, which we have a lot of here in Atlanta, and that typically means anyway that you are accelerating into heavy traffic, and that's something different. So you're not necessarily going to take it all the way up to 60 again. I do admit that, you know, I have a lot of fun kind of blasting onto a highway if there's, you know, open road in front of me. The reality is, though, you know, you're already starting at a rolling start. You're starting at, you know, 10, 15, maybe even 20 miles an hour as you come around the corner to get onto the on-ramp and then begin your acceleration. So that's a little bit different. And, you know, some of the best cars that I've had, some of the manual transmissions, my favorite gear is sometimes, you know, second or third gear in that car. It's not necessarily first gear. And a lot of these cars that we're going to talk about here have kind of cheated the system in order to get to 0-60 by gearing. And I say cheated. I mean, these are manufacturers that are doing this, but they have geared the cars so that, you know, 60 is achieved in first gear for some of the bigger V8 engine cars. When you do that, you kind of take out the human equation out of the whole thing. It's just a matter of mashing down the accelerator, you know, dumping the clutch, going as fast as you can, and you get up to 60 in no time practically. But that takes out, you know, the point where you have to shift, and that takes out a little bit of the skill out of the whole thing. And again, I think I've heard, you know, the Viper does that. I think the one of the Mustangs does that. Maybe Corvette, I'm not exactly sure. I can't remember the list of manufacturers that have done that, where you can achieve 60 in first gear, and again, just kind of take some of the work out of it for the human. Unless you have to shift, you know, there's really not a whole lot of skill involved in going 60, and it happens really, really quick. But honestly, like the thing is, 0-60 is kind of a misleading measurement of performance, and that's because, you know, most of the real world driving that we're talking about, you know, you're either starting with a rolling start, or, you know, maybe a better view of this, a better look at you know, the more usable speed would be from, like, you know, 30 or even 40 to 60. A lot of people use that as a measurement of performance of a vehicle, and the reason behind that is because that's when you're passing another car on the highway, or if you're exiting a corner on a track, or, you know, even if you're exiting a corner, you know, not city necessarily, but maybe out in the country or something, and you want to kind of get that that adrenaline rush as you go around the corner and then accelerate out. Really, from, like, you know, 40 to 60, 30 to 60, 30 to 70, whatever you want to measure this. I mean, there's a lot of different measurements there. That's really where the power matters, and that's where you can feel the acceleration of the car. You can feel, you know, the strength of the car, the speed, the weight, the traction. All that matters more so. You know, as far as the gearing goes, you know, the gearing tends to be a little bit better in that range. It's not necessarily, you know, the real quick, I'm in first, but I have to shift into second almost immediately, unlike some of those other cars we talked about, the Viper or whatever. But they have taken some of the sensation out of driving, if you want to put it that way. And I think that one of the cars that they mentioned here in one of the articles that I looked at, it's called digitaltrends.com. And you can look at something that they did here. They compared the Nissan GT-R and the Aston Martin V8 Vantage GT. Now, both of these cars claim to be entry-level supercars, and they both cost around $100,000. So I realize that these are expensive vehicles. But because they are at that same price point and they are considered kind of these entry-level supercars, you can compare them and maybe, judge them based on the sensation that they give you when you drive them. And on paper, it seems like there, as it says here in the article, there should be no comparison. The Nissan does 0 to 60 in something like 3 seconds flat. And the Aston Martin, the 0 to 60 speed is 4.6 seconds. So it seems like the GTR would be the car to drive, right? That'd be the fun one to drive. And it's definitely faster and should be the one that you choose, right, based on 0 to 60. So the idea here is that if the 0 to 60 times are helpful, which they should be here, the difference between the cars isn't just a couple of tenths of a second. It's actually a pretty big gap there. I mean, there's between 3 seconds and 4.6 seconds, that's a lot of distance between, or a lot of time, rather, between the 0 to 60 when it's reached. But they do say this, and I've never driven either one of these cars. I've seen both of them on the road, and they're both very impressive. But I guess when you're driving them, it's a lot different. The thing is, the Aston actually feels a lot faster. And the reason is because the Nissan GT-R, the function of getting up to 60 is so easy. It's achieved so quickly and in first gear that there's really nothing to it, as I just mentioned before. It's just simply a matter of, dumping the clutch and going 60 miles an hour. Anybody can do it. All the sensation, all the feel, all the engine sounds, all of that is relatively tame. And I understand that it's a brutal car. I get it, but tame compared to the Aston Martin. So they say that the Aston Martin acceleration is a little bit more exciting because it's more visceral. You hear the engine noise, you feel the vibration, you feel the steering wheel. There's more feedback to the car, and that gives you a better sensation of speed. Even though you're getting there in 4.6 seconds, which is still lightning quick, really, you're still feeling that car, and it feels faster. It's kind of, if I had to compare this to anything, I might even say that it's like when you're in a go-kart or even an open-top car, and you feel like when you're low to the ground, you've got the wind blowing in your hair, you can hear the noise, you can feel it, it's kind of rough. You could be in a go-kart going 30 miles an hour and you think you're going 100 miles an hour. That's just a sensation that you get. And that's kind of the idea behind some of these cars we're talking about and how they have, that visceral feel, that sensation that, they're going faster than they really are. And I know, just as a side note, I know my wife always thinks I'm going way faster in my car than she's going in her car. She's got a Jeep Wrangler, and it's a relatively, tall vehicle, and it just doesn't have the same sound and feel as my car does, which is, it's just a sedan. It's nothing special. It's a Volkswagen CC, and it's just lower, and it just has that sensation of a faster speed. So she'll look over and think I'm going, 90 miles an hour, and I'm going 60 miles an hour on the highway. It just has a different feel when you're that much closer to the pavement, and you don't have maybe that commanding view that you have above. It's a little bit, maybe she feels a little bit less in control than when you have that high view vantage point. I do want to talk about a couple of cars here that have, some slower times and some faster times. I guess the best and the worst cars for acceleration, and we will do that quickly. And I promise you, we're going to get to this this other thing because there's a new, I guess you'd call it a new record claimed by one of the manufacturers, and we do want to get to that. But we'll do that after we take a break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back, and you're listening to the Fast Track, and I'm your host, Scott Benjamin. And just before the break, we were talking about some of the best and worst acceleration rates or speeds for cars in the world. And I want to start out with a couple of cars here, the current production cars in the U.S., and then we're going to talk about some of the slowest cars in the world. And some of the slowest cars in the world, 0 to 60 times, if you're still paying attention to 0 to 60 times after, what we've just said here on this podcast, if you want to get the best vehicles that are on the road right now in the U.S., you want to look at a couple of cars that are fairly expensive. There's the Porsche 911 Carrera S, which is around 4.1 seconds, 0 to 60 miles per hour. And then the Corvette Stingray comes in next, the 3LT at 4.3. There's a Jaguar, the Camaro SS, there's the Porsche Porsche 718 Boxster, which is the base vehicle, comes in at 4.4 seconds. There's the Ford Mustang GT Premium, which comes in at 4.9 seconds. Then there's a bunch of others here on this list. We're not going to list all of them. You can find these lists if you want to at consumerreports.org. And they're listed under the best and worst car acceleration. I'm going to give you possibly a better site to go to even than that one in just a moment, because there's a site that is dedicated to nothing but 0 to 60 times if you want to go by these numbers. But on this list of best acceleration vehicles, we just kind of wrapped up with the Ford Mustang. And we'll mention here that there's also a Tesla. The Tesla Model X is on there. Mercedes-Benz, another Tesla. BMW, a couple of them. There's a Nissan. There's a Maserati. Of course, a Dodge, a Jaguar. There's a whole bunch here on this list. And then they list the slowest vehicles. And I'm going to tell you that the slowest cars on this list, these are the current U.S. production vehicles' slowest times. And so the slowest one on the list is by far not the slowest one ever to be recorded, 0 to 60. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But the current slowest production vehicle, 0 to 60, in the U.S. is the Mitsubishi Mirage ES, which comes in at 12.1 seconds, 0 to 60. And the Chevrolet Spark 1LT, which comes in at 12 seconds. Then the Fiat 500 Sport, which is funny that they call it the Fiat Sport, at 11.3 seconds. And then the Toyota Prius, the Toyota CHR, then the Hyundai Kona, the Buick Encore Leather Edition, Ford Focus SE, which is the 1-liter engine, and then the Hyundai Tucson. All of those are right around 11 seconds, you know, somewhere around 11.1, 11.2, 3, you know, et cetera, up to the Mitsubishi Mirage, which comes in again at 12.1 seconds. Now, those are the current U.S. production vehicles. And, you know, one quick thing that I don't know if I mentioned this, you know, we said that 0 to 60 might not be something that you necessarily pay a whole lot of attention to, but I can tell you one case where it probably does matter to you, and it's one that a lot of people find, it's a bad position a lot of people find themselves in. You pull out into traffic, you know, you're exiting the shopping mall, or you're exiting, you know, the grocery store or whatever, and you kind of misjudge the traffic that's approaching from the nearest stoplight. You pull out and you realize, hey, that traffic's moving a lot faster than I thought it was. I'm going to try to accelerate and get, you know, ahead of them or stay ahead of them, so, you know, you're not making a burden of yourself there in the middle of traffic. And you realize quickly that, you know, everybody's overtaking you. You can't get that little car to go as fast as you wanted it to go, or that big car to go as fast as you wanted it to go. And that's one situation, I think, where it pays to have a car that accelerates kind of quick. Those situations where you need to, for your own safety, go just a little bit faster or get up to speed quickly. And I found myself in that position many, many times. And that is kind of scary. So maybe that's one thing that you do need to consider when you're thinking about a quick accelerating vehicle. Getting back to slow accelerating vehicles, and this is, I find this to be a funny list. And this is the site that I want to tell you about. The site is 0to60times.com. That's 0to60times, and 60 is 60times.com. And they have several lists here. I mean, you can search cars by make, model, ranges, you know, cars that are in the 2-second range, cars that are in the 5-second range. You can search classics, hatchbacks, whatever you want. You can break this down just about any way, really. You can browse by anything, manufacturer, whatever you like. They have current and vehicles that are out of production, and that's where this list comes in, because this is the slowest cars in the world. The 0 to 60 specs of the slowest cars in the world. And some of these are kind of funny. And some of them you would absolutely expect. Now, I know a lot of cars aren't built for speed, and that's the reason that they're on this list. They're built for practicality. So a couple of the cars here that are on this list, and I'm going to just mention one right now. It's not the slowest, but the Tata Nano is one of the cars that we've kind of made fun of in the past a little bit on car stuff, but the car does have its place in the world. There's a purpose for the Tata Nano. And the purpose was that it was a vehicle that was at a very, very low price point. I think a brand new vehicle was something like, you know, $3,000, whatever that translates to in India. I can't remember exactly the price point there. But it's a vehicle that was created for people that normally would be driving or riding on a motorcycle or a moped to work and to school and around, you know, just around the city. And it's very dangerous. Have you ever seen any of these intersections that are just chaotic and crowded, and you know, you see 3, 4, sometimes 5 people on a motorcycle? And, you know, I'm laughing a little bit, but it's funny, it's humorous, but it's also exceedingly dangerous. And a lot of people are injured or killed on these every year. And this gets them into a vehicle that, you know, I don't know if any of them have air conditioning or anything like that. I'm not sure. But it gets them into a vehicle that has some type of structure around them. There's something there to protect them in the event that, you know, there's a collision. And if you do look at some of these, you know, these crowded intersections in some of these developing nations, you'll find that, you know, the traffic control system, if there is one even at all, is definitely not what we have here in the United States. And it's exceedingly poor. And there's a lot of collisions that happen. And it's very, very dangerous situation. So the Tata Nano is a perfect example of you know, a vehicle that is on this list not for speed necessarily, but because, you know, it had a purpose in mind. It was built for a purpose. And some of the other cars on this list are classics. They're older vehicles that were just simply commuter cars. They were city cars. Again, you know, one step above mini or micro cars even, or even, you know, maybe that's what they were, mini cars really. They weren't built for performance and or for getting up to top speed. And sometimes 60 is the top speed of these cars. That's another issue with some of them. You know, I think the Tata Nano, the top speed is 62 miles per hour. That's the very maximum on them. In fact, the number one vehicle on the list, that is the maximum speed. So I can understand why it takes so long to get there. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but we'll start down at number 10, which is the 1968 Fiat 850 Idromatic, which goes 0 to 60 in 25.4 seconds. Now, that's a long time. If you were to start a stopwatch, you would realize just how long that is to, you know, to get out into traffic, try to accelerate, try to get up to speed with what, you know, the type of speed of traffic that we see typically here in the modern day. Number nine on the list is the 2014 Tata Nano Twist XT, which goes 0 to 60 in 27 seconds. Then there's a couple more Tatas here on the list. And then the 1950 Triumph Mayflower is another one that's on the list. 27.9 seconds. So we're creeping up a little bit here, but only up by 1 second. As we get up to the midpoint on the list is the 2009 Tata Nano, which goes 0 to 60 in 29.4 seconds. And then we go back to 1954 for a Triumph, a model of the Triumph called the Renown. And the Renown is pretty slow. It's at 29.5 seconds, but that is not the slowest vehicle. And they do jump up incrementally here in just very, very small amounts. We're talking about the 1959 Austin Mini Cooper 850 MK, which goes 0 to 60 in 29.6 seconds. Then another Triumph Renown model, again, 29.9 seconds. Another Triumph, again, so Triumph is represented on this list many, many times, as is Tata. This is the Herald model, the Triumph Herald from 1960. It's the 948 edition, so less than a liter in this car. It's a little coupe model, 29.9 seconds. But the number one vehicle on this list, the slowest 0 to 60 time, according to 0to60times.com, is a car called the Mia Electric Car. Now, it's an all-electric vehicle. It's a French-made vehicle. Does 0 to 60 in exactly 30 seconds. Now, I have the Mia pulled up here on a website, and I'm looking at it right now. It was produced between June of 2011 and December of 2013, and it was built in France. It's a three-door hatchback, and there was also a van edition of this vehicle. And it's not a car that was sold here in the United States. It was a European market vehicle, and of course, it's just a commuter car. The top speed on this one is 100 kilometers per hour, which is equivalent to 62 miles per hour. So that is the maximum speed on this vehicle. It had a small battery. I believe that, you know, the equivalent horsepower in this thing was something like, I'm going to ballpark this. I think it was like around, you know, 12, 13 horsepower, something like that. It's a very, very low horsepower vehicle to begin with. And of course, horsepower is not all that matters in this. We're talking about torque and all kinds of other things. And electric cars typically have a lot of torque, which is surprising. But, you know, I guess maybe this one just had such a small electric motor that it was unable to climb up to that maximum speed very quickly, as we see in some of the other higher performing electric vehicles that we do see today. Because there are several that are you know, decent performers now. It wasn't always the case, but there are some now. But again, the Mia Electric, I think they gave the 2012 model the lowest rating. You know, I think I have just about no more really to say about 0 to 60 times at this point. And, you know, if you find 0 to 60 still a measurement that you want to go by for buying your vehicle, you know, please do. If you find that still interesting, please do. And I still do look at it as kind of a standard. And it's just one of those equal playing fields that everybody can kind of look at and say, like, okay, I can see where one car relates to another one or how it compares on, again, an even playing field somewhat. maybe that even playing field isn't quite as even as we're thinking when I tell you what I'm going to tell you next, because there is a new article that came out just recently from Car and Driver, and there is gosh, I don't know the best way to put this. Maybe there's a new king in town, and it is the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500, and this one goes by a different measurement, and it's a measurement that we don't hear an awful lot about, but it is out there, and it's something that manufacturers use for selling vehicles. It's a marketing tool, really, and it is impressive. I mean, it is, until you maybe parse this out and figure out exactly what we're talking about here. So we're talking about a standing start up to 100 miles per hour, and then back to a standing stop again. And there's a little bit of trickery that goes on here. And I want to tell you that the Mustang Shelby GT500 currently holds this record, and Ford claims the number is 10.6 seconds. So 0 to 100 to 0 in 10.6 seconds, which is really, really fast. I mean, that's a quick speed. We were talking about, you know, cars that could barely muster up to 60 in that time, and to climb from 60 to 100 and then back to zero again, that takes an awful lot more time in a lot of cases, and if they can even do it, really. This car goes on sale this fall, and it will begin somewhere around $74,000. So there's a $74,000 MSRP on this vehicle. And the thing is, you have to look at this number and, again, break it down into what it really means. This has been done by several manufacturers before, and here's how this all works out. And I didn't know this until I read this article. I thought that they were doing a true, you know, standing start, accelerate up to 100, and then back down to zero. That's not the way that this all plays out. The way these magazines kind of put these numbers together is a little bit deceptive, but they're accurate in a way, and I'll tell you how this all happens. What they do is they take a car from 0 to 100 and they measure that speed. So let's say that a car can go from 0 to 100 in, I'm going to take the Camaro SS 1LE as an example here. Let's say it goes from 0 to 100 in 9.1 seconds. So they get that speed, and that's easy to achieve. You know, you just hammer the accelerator and you get to 9.1 seconds. That's a 0 to 100. Then they take another separate test where they're already going 100 miles per hour, and then they brake as hard as they can without lockup. And for this car, this Camaro SSLE, 1LE that I'm talking about, 100 to 0, the braking speed in time, I guess, I should say the time, is 3.8 seconds. So they add together the 9.1 seconds and the 3.8 seconds, and then they get the estimated 0 to 100 to 0 speed of 12.9 seconds. So I think, I mean, everybody can understand how this is all working out, right? It's not 0 to 100 to 0. It's more like 0 to 100, and then we'll start a new test, 100 to 0, and then add the two numbers together, and that's what we get. And that's how they measure all these. And that is something that I had no idea that that's the way they were doing it. And I think there have been cars in the past that have done this. Now, Carroll Shelby did it back in 1965 in the Shelby Cobra, the 427. And you might be surprised to learn that the Cobra 427 had a speed, and this is still quick, at 14.5 seconds. But when you consider that the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500, the current vehicle that's going to be on sale this fall, does it in 10.6 seconds, 14.5 sounds relatively slow. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, vehicles in this type of performance range. Other cars that do it quickly are the Ford Mustang GT, which has the Performance Pack Level 2. I don't know exactly what that means. 13.2 seconds. And then, of course, there's the Mustang Shelby GT350, which does it in around 12.6 seconds. Other cars that, you know, have done this, there are other vehicles, of course. You know, the Corvette's always in there somewhere. Of course, manufacturers do kind of play around with these a little bit, as you can see, and, you know, they give you the best numbers, obviously. Of course, they want to turn in the best numbers, as do, you know, some of the magazines that put out these numbers. The testing is just it's a little bit deceptive if you look at it that way. And again, I had no idea. So what they're doing is they're extrapolating now how quickly the current Mustang, we're talking about the Mustang Shelby GT500, they're extrapolating that one will be able to accelerate in 6.7 seconds, and that's based on what they assume the braking is going to be, and they assume that it's going to be somewhere around 3.8 seconds, because in this group, you know, in this type of vehicle that we're talking about, you know, the heavy end of this group, they're estimating that a 100 to 0 time of about, well, I guess about 3.9 seconds. Then they subtract, you know, from the 10.6 seconds, and, you know, they get the number that they think it's going to be. So, again, 6.7 seconds, 0 to 100 is what they're estimating to be the 0 to 100 time for this vehicle. So, again, you look into this whole thing, because there's a lot of interesting interesting ways that manufacturers play around with the numbers and make it kind of work for them. And this is nothing new. Manufacturers have done this for a long, long time, kind of played around with the stuff and kind of slant the test to kind of go the way they want to, or, you know, gear the car so that it exceeds, you know, certain parameters that they want it to, so they can then have these bragging rights, you know, 0 to 100 or 0 to 60 or whatever it happens to be. But definitely dig into that stuff if that type of thing is important to you. And you can go to carandriver.com or, you know, 0 to 60 times.com or any of those sites that I've talked about. Digital Trends had some articles on this. You can find 0 to 60 times, 0 to 100 times for just about every vehicle out there, really. It's pretty easy to do. And, you know, honestly, I don't think I have a whole lot more to say about this. Again, I hope you find it just kind of a good starting point for your research and your delving into exactly, you know, what's important to you when you're buying a new vehicle as far as acceleration goes. And if you want to find us on Twitter, we are the Fast Track Pod. And on Facebook and on Instagram, we are the Fast Track Show. And we also have a brand new website that you can check out, and that is called thefasttrackshow.com. Again, thefasttrackshow.com. That's our new website, and that's where we're going to house all of our podcasts from this point forward. So I know we're just beginning here, and we'll soon have kind of an archive of material there for you to search back and, you know, check out some of the earlier episodes. Right now, we're still early on in this whole thing. Of course, you can you know, leave reviews if you want to, I mean, which I think is always nice to do. You know, good or bad, we'll take it all. We'd like to hear what you think. You can do that on Apple Podcasts or on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you happen to listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, particularly if you like what you're hearing, tell your friends all about it, because you know, we'd like to gain some new listeners. And thanks for listening. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.